to the English Premier League Debundling Award Ceremony. Now here are your hosts, Andrew Gundling and J.J. Devaney.
From the beautiful caught offside ballroom on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, it is Andrew Gundling and J.J. Devaney. What's up, brother?
Can you please fix your cummerbund? It's all over the place.
I'm not a cummerbund guy.
Yeah, you're wearing one right now.
I'm not. I took it off before the show. You're confused. I'm a suspenders and bow tie kind of guy.
Oh, sorry. That was Mel Gibson. I met him in the hall.
Mel's here.
Why did we invite Mel?
Oh, man. One of our favorite nights of the year, this beautiful gala. All the beautiful people of the sport have come out for this tonight. I saw Sepp Blatter is here.
The beautiful people of the sport.
He's here.
Graziano Pella is here.
All right, wow.
You could pour that man into a suit.
Oh, one of our favorite nights. Yes, this is the night where we hand out all of our awards for what has been a truly awesome and fun season in the Premier League. All the awards tonight, all the people are here. Manager of the season, matches of the season, signings of the season, worst signings of the season, all the things that you could hope to have handed out tonight.
Now, someone on Twitter suggested that we hire Ricky Gervais to present, which in that case, everyone would be insulted and just leave.
And that people need to realize that they need to take a joke.
Mm.
He's fantastic.
But when you get to a certain point in life, a certain moneyed status, a certain rarefied air, you don't like having people say things about you.
Yeah, well,
that's why we didn't hire him, guys. Not because we couldn't have afforded him.
Right. We went strictly with Bruce Valanche. He just is a patter writer.
Who's Bruce Valanche?
Google him.
Okay.
He like writes the corny things.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's what he does.
Anyway, Billy Crystal, that would have been the one for me.
Well, that was never going to happen. Oh, man, I'm so excited about this. The first part of the show tonight will be the Devundlings for the 2018-19 season. The second part of our show tonight will be the after party, where we'll give you a little bit of kind of what to watch for the weekend. You've got plenty of takes on the championship and even League One, I think you said, the playoffs, the semifinals.
Championship playoff semifinals have been, as the children say, lit. Mm-hmm. League One, not as lit, but interesting in a different way.
A couple things to throw out before we actually start in with the awards for tonight. First and foremost, now this is a big one, all right? It's not set in stone just yet, but I want you all to start planning for June 1st, Champions League final, live show.
In Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
You'll watch the game with us, and then we will record a podcast directly afterwards.
Just get that on your calendars, and when everything is set, we will announce the exact location.
But you get to have a pint with Andrew Gundling.
But it looks like this is actually going to be happening.
Which is amazing.
This means that you and I are actually going to watch the Champions League final between our two teams, a caught offside cup, in the same location together. We've never done that before.
So today I helped my friend who is going to Madrid for the final, who is a massive Liverpool fan. I helped him procure a ticket for that final. And he was so excited. And I thought, I'm so excited about this final. And then I thought, I'm going to be watching it with you. Mm-hmm. And a little excitement ebbed away.
That's fair, because you know what? The feeling is mutual.
I'm excited about this final, though. And I'm excited about us watching it with some of you guys.
The only thing I'm not excited about is your refusal to make the same pledge that I made, that I will not be a D to you. And the fact that you can't say that back to me, now we're going to do this show and it's going to be you and me. And what if all these people who believe that, you know, you and I are quote unquote friends.
We are friends.
Now they're all going to come to this party, which is going to be great. And you and I are going to fight. We're going to have a fight in this bar in front of everybody.
We're going to roll out into the street in Manhattan.
Right.
Real old style kind
like
of.
Like Peter Griffin and the chicken.
Yeah. We're going to end up at the top of the Empire State duking it out.
Right.
I don't think so. Look, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but if Liverpool raise number six, I will be very magnanimous because I will be so smug. So very smug.
God, that podcast is going to be so uncomfortable.
But it's going to be fun. for everyone to be there. And just it's not set in stone. It's more in wet cement right now.
But we just want to make sure that it's on all of your radar.
Yeah.
Because
watch party, yeah. Manhattan caught offside. How do you like that?
As soon as details are official, you will have them. All right. Are you ready to begin?
Yes.
Here we go, JJ. We'll start off the first award this evening for the season that was in the Premier League, our manager of the season. Now, we each have different managers. For all the awards, you and I will each give out a different one.
Yeah,
that's,
I think,
kind of the rule.
Right. And even when we come to team of the season, I've decided to be very kind of not Liverpool-centric. I've tried to spread things.
I actually did the complete opposite.
You just went, it's entirely Tottenham.
No. I was extremely Liverpool-centric.
Okay.
all right. Manager of the season. I'm going to go first here, JJ. I went with Ralf Hasenhüttl of Southampton, a manager who didn't even manage the team for the entire season. He is my winner. I was so close to going with Pep, but I went with Ralf, and here's why. Here's what Ryan Bertrand said of his manager, who took the reins in mid-December from Mark Hughes. Bertrand said, "The manager has come in and given us an identity. He's given us a clear style of play and leaves no stone unturned. It's a real pleasure to go on the field like that and not have people questioning each other."
Jesus.
This team was lost under Mark Hughes.
That is damning.
Extremely. Like, damning to the point of, like, where is he going to work again?
Yeah. Like, what did he even do when he was there?
Yeah. And how did all those great seasons under Stoke actually happen? But Hasenhüttl came in. He changed the style into more of an in-your-face press style. Got the best out of his best players, which is, I feel like that's a thing that's taken for granted. Nathan Redmond scored 9 goals this season. All of them after Hasenhüttl came in mid-December.
And where's Nathan Redmond now? Called up to the England Nations League squad for the semi-final.
They were 18th in the table when he took over. They had won just 3 of their last 22 games dating back to the previous season. But after Hasenhüttl took charge, they won 8, they drew 6, they lost 9, and they allowed themselves a safe end to the season with momentum to build on for next season. They were headed for relegation, and then he came in and changed everything. They won 9 games this year. 8 of them were while he was in charge. So he is my manager of the season, JJ.
I think that's a worthy one. I never saw that coming from you.
Yeah.
My manager of the season is Rafa Benitez. Watching a mid-table Newcastle United romp to a 4-0 final day away win at already relegated Fulham, not really how many people saw this season going for either club. Amy Lawrence pointed this out in our match report in The Guardian. Finishing the campaign in sunny mid-table, it was worth remembering Newcastle began with a run of 8 defeats and 2 draws from the first 10 Premier League games, even worse form than the team they played in the final day, Fulham. Benitez pulled it all together expertly. That he did. A 13th place finish, which is 3 places worse off than last season, is nothing to be scoffed at, though. This is a team that is playing well beyond their collective abilities. Benitez is draining absolutely every drop he can from the squad, and while the addition of record-breaking signing Miggy Almiron was a timely move in January, this is a team that you would think needs surgery in more than just one area. At the start of the season, I thought they'd struggle to score goals, Andrew, and that was going to be their big problem. But to keep them up, the Gale Rondon swap, that was genius. Masterstroke. Rondon bagged 11 league goals, voted club player of the year, while Perez bagged 12. Okay, so what is that? 23 goals. Newcastle only scored 42 goals in total this season. Benitez has promoted from within. Sean Longstaff's performance against Manchester City in the 1-0 win, that was total vindication of bringing him up from the under-23s. And he was so good, he pretty much relegated senior pros like Shelby to the bench until he got injured. Solid pros like Richie, Dummett, Lascelles have benefited massively from the organisation and coaching of Rafa. And imagine if Mike Ashley opened those purse strings just a little bit more, what they could be. If management is about managing resources and coaching, he's got to be the manager of the year, the coach of the year. He's making average players, championship players in some cases, play way beyond what they're capable of.
Look at us. Look how cutting edge we are and different and creative. Two lower table teams and we get... everybody wants... Oh, Pep.
But like, we could have gone for Sean Dyche. Look at the way they started the season.
Yeah.
And look at what he did. That's an honourable mention.
So there you go. That was manager of the season. We move now to match of the season. This will be given out over the course of the night. I will go first. Yours will come a little bit later on in the program. JJ... It lacked the drama of title implications, top four implications, or even relegation implications, but if you sat down to watch Wolves and Leicester at the Molyneux on January 19th, I gather your expectation to entertainment ratio was possibly higher than it would have been for maybe any other game this season. Here, is what it sounded like.
So two of the Premier League's most robust and substantial middleweights. Seconds away, in by Johnny, and Jota! Wolves in next to no time! Coutinho with drift, Bennett rising, and Wolves are two to the good! Laurie Gray has passed him, and Gray has scored promptly for Leicester, whose outlook is suddenly altogether brighter. Chilwell got away from Den Donker, came to Barnes! 2-2 in a flash! By Neves, who's played a peach of a pass here for Jota. Diogo Jota, 3-2 Wolves. Anderson's delivery, Morgan! 3-3. Neves, he's seen Jimenez. Away from Chilwell. And Jota's won it! 30 seconds from time! A match-winning hat-trick from Diogo Jota. What a game, what a game. For those Wolves fans, a lifetime of stories out of one Premier League day.
Peter Drury on the call, NBCSN. 5 second half goals, impossibly poor defending. Nuno Espirito Santo sent off and fined for celebrating with his players after Jota's winning goal. The Molyneux saw a number of great days this season. This one may have been the most fun of all of them.
Cracking game, though.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, going back and kind of reliving that and watching the highlights of that one again, it just goes to show the like how quickly the highs and lows can come about. So Wes Morgan scores to make it 3-3 in, I think, the 86th minute. And then, you know, moments later on Wolves' winning goal, who was the player who was just so far out of position and so far behind the play on Jota's winner? Wes Morgan. You can't shut off in this sport against good teams, and Wolves proved to be that just this year. That was a really, really fun game. I remember Claude Puel on the sideline after the winning goal with just his head in his hands and like in disbelief that they had allowed that winner.
On Instagram, I asked people to contribute what was their favorite game. That actually won.
Really?
More people chose that game than anything else.
Wow. I would not have thought that.
Now, I asked them for moments, and they talked about that game. That was just a fascinating watch for everyone. I wonder what the other games were up against it that made people, that drew people to that game.
Well, you know what was fun about it too, which I wanted to mention. I'm glad you kind of brought that up. It's not just, so the final was 4-3. Go back and watch the extended NBC highlights on YouTube. They're like 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. It could have been like 9-8. Honestly, yeah. Like Jota himself probably could have had 5 or 6 goals. This game, there was, you see 4-3 and you think, oh, goalkeeping must have been shambles. The goalkeeping was actually really good. This game could have been, as crazy as it was, it could have been even crazier. We'll get your match of the season a little bit later on in the show. For now, though, we move on to the signing of the season. You go first.
I'm not sure yet, Andrew, if the club record 30 million or so Eddie Howe spent on Jefferson Lerma was money well spent for Bournemouth. Jury's out on that one. Mm. However, the signing of David Brooks from Sheffield United for £11 million was brilliant talent identification and a superb signing by Eddie Howe. Bear in mind that James Maddison, who is an excellent player, was a standout for Norwich last season and was signed by Leicester for £25 million. Or in the region, that's dollars. A young, talented, ball-playing, attacking midfielder signed from the Championship for peanuts will always stand out as a signing, but Brooks didn't always stand out to everyone. He was at Man City as a youth and was effectively forced out by a raft of foreign signings and limited playing time. He was considered too small by a couple of Championship teams. I can't name them, it's too embarrassing. Before Sheffield United took him on, last season was his only full season of Championship football. One season of Championship football, 30 games with Sheffield United before Bournemouth recognised him as a special player. His performance against Chelsea in January was the standout performance in a 7-goal, 5-assist season for the Welsh international. He's one of the best players to watch. He's one of the most exciting players to watch. And I think we have the audio for his goal against Chelsea.
He's given it straight to King, and King looks for Brooks. The flag stays down. It's still Brooks! Brilliant! 2-0 to Bournemouth!
What a goal that was, and what a performance that was from him. I think, obviously, people were aware of him before that game, but that game just blasted him onto a different stage. And now the problem becomes for Bournemouth is, you know, can you keep him for another season?
Yeah, he did flourish there, so who knows? He may not want to leave, even necessarily, but...
No, I wouldn't think that he would, that he's found somewhere now. I mean, it's the teams that turned him down in the championship, he was very upset. He was finding it. He thought he would be out of football after leaving Man City.
Wow.
Which is, it's nuts.
Yeah. That's a good shout by you. Here's mine, JJ. It's actually a name that you mentioned when you were talking about Rafa Benitez. Went with Solomon Rondon. Now, it's a loan. Is this allowed?
It's totally allowed, okay, because it was a bit of genius. And and also, they're probably going to try, if they can convince Mike Ashley to pay for a player over who will be over 30 by the time the season starts.
Yeah.
Like, the hoops they have to jump through.
To sign Rondon.
Solomon Rondon.
Yeah. But it's funny we're talking like this, because that's kind of the point here. Were any Newcastle fans excited when they found out that their big summer move would be a loan swap for West Brom striker Solomon Rondon? But let's take a look at just how valuable Rondon turned out to be. Now, like you said before, 11 goals this season, 7 assists. But let's go even deeper than that. He scored 2 goals versus Bournemouth, a 2-1 win. 1 goal versus Everton, a 1-1 draw. 1 goal versus Huddersfield, a 1-0 win. 1 goal versus Watford, a 1-1 draw. 1 goal versus City, a 2-1 win. 1 goal and 1 assist, 2-0 win over Huddersfield. 1 goal and 1 assist in a 3-2 win over Everton. 1 goal against Bournemouth in a 2-2 draw. The margin for error with a club like Newcastle is always going to be really slim. They defend, they don't score a ton of goals, take your chances when you get it. But by my tally there, JJ, those results of when Rondon scored equal to 18 points. He didn't just score a solid number of goals this season. He did it when it mattered most. I mean, almost all of his goals this year were in one-goal wins or in draws. Take that away from Newcastle this season, and they are
down,
probably going down.
Deeper and down.
Yeah. So who would have ever thought that he would have turned into that for them when they made that swap?
I roundly criticized the move. And now that West Brom are not coming back up, it means that they're put into the position that they're going to have to buy this player that's been really good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that was our signing of the season. Now we go to the other side of the coin, the worst signing of the season. You're up first.
I've gone with Alexis Sanchez, who was technically signed in January 2018.
I don't know if we can allow this.
Well, we're allowing it. I mean, I could go with Denis Suarez. That would be a very good one as well. But I just want to talk about Alexis Sanchez, because he was signed in the January. He wasn't 100% fit, but he had the whole summer off, which is not always been a common thing for him to have a lot of time off football. And for him to come back, 1 goal in 20 games, and to be as poor as he's been for United is just incredible, to the point where he was being left out of squads, he was being left on the bench regularly for United. $645,000 a week. This is just crazy stuff. United's recruitment, he will be the statue, the white elephant of United recruiting for this period in time. And they're going to have a real job. We know Inter are interested. We know, we've heard today for some reason, that Juventus are interested. But
wait, what?
Yeah. These are the rumors from fairly reputable sources.
Oh, transfer rumors.
Yeah, well, I mean, it will be a very interesting signing if he does go, but how they get rid of the rest of his contract is, I mean, they're going to have to probably pay him 15 million or something. More than that. I don't even know what the buyout is or what they can do, or will it? It will probably still have to be a loan, which means United will still be paying a portion of his wages.
I guess the thing that's frustrating with him is we can't tell yet if this is just a shot player or if it's just United's system that is holding him back. You know what I mean? Like, when he came to United...
Well, United being bad.
Right, but like, he came to United and he was coming off of just a relentless stretch of football where Chile were going deep in whatever competition was happening
about
that summer.
7 years worth, or 5 years worth.
Like, he basically had no break for a number of years. So when he got to United, is he just wiped? Or if he goes to another club, could he bounce back in just a different system? And
you know
back
me,
to the
I don't like
we thought he was.
I don't like
at Arsenal.
I don't like writing players off in their 30s because often it comes back to bite you.
Yeah,
but just this is a staggering number, like that they had to have him, and then for this to happen. Because don't forget, they beat out Manchester City to get him. Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, I mean, Man City thought that there was value there too. Everybody,
Man City were not. First of all, Man City and wage structures and things like that are quite different. Now, United have the money, obviously, to do these things too. But surely it's a sign when Manchester City won't go. You know, you're overpaying.
Right. City can spend whatever they want on anyone they want.
They wouldn't go to that.
I will say I do have a slight problem with this because he's not a signing from this season. I mean, what if I just decided at this year's Academy Awards, hey, we're going to make Dunkirk this year's winner, but that was one of last year's.
Because you're obsessed with
that. That was one of last year's movies. Yeah, but we just want to do it for this year.
How about you just, it was his first full season. That's my point.
So Lucas Moura could have been my signing of the season.
I actually wouldn't have cared if you did that. Well, wouldn't have cared.
The rules matter. Without the rule of law, what are we left with?
You're the rule of law guy, are you?
I am. That surprises you?
It does surprise me. It really does.
Let's see. My worst signing of the season, JJ. Well, I guess this tells you everything you need to know about the season Manchester United have, because you just went with Alexis Sanchez, and I'm going with Fred. If the goal of the transfer market is to find good value for your money, then what do you say about a guy who cost £53 million, started just 13 games, and scored just once and assisted just once all season? And remember, he's not just some young prospect waiting for his turn. He's 26. The expectation was that he'd come in right away and fit in with United and lift their midfield, but he did nothing of the sort, and his market value has probably been sliced in half. And United are now stuck with another contract albatross. Sanchez, Fred, Pogba, all these players that you see these names, and it just reminds you that the game is not played on paper. Fit matters.
System matters.
Yeah.
All those things matter. We could have gone to Fulham and just done the entire Fulham midfield.
Well, don't worry. They'll
get theirs.
They'll have their turn. those are our worst signings of the season. And just a reminder to everybody as we take a brief intermission here, feel free to send us your tweets or Instagram posts with how you agree or disagree or whatever on all of these, because this show is kind of geared towards that.
Yeah, there are no rights and wrongs here. We just want your opinions.
That's right. Now, during this intermission, JJ, you know what I have here? You're going to hate this.
Trivia.
No. Although you would have really hated that. No. Here, I went back to our EPL preview pods before the season.
Forgive me, Sean Dyche.
And I went back to find the predictions that we made, and I have them in front of me.
Okay.
Manager of the year. I said Chris Hughton, who was just fired. That didn't bode well. But my whole thing was that I went back and listened to the explanation, and I basically said...
Keep them up.
I said they're terrible, and I believe he's going to keep them up. So I was right, but unfortunately for Brighton, that wasn't good enough because he had them up to like 12th at one point, and people lost their minds and thought that that's what they were, and they weren't. You said Unai Emery.
Hey,
I still win a trophy.
I was heading towards that until they decided to go into utter meltdown.
What were they, 22 unbeaten at one point? Top scorer. I'll tell you what, my friend, you nailed it, kind of.
I said Aubameyang.
Yeah, Aubameyang. Yeah. I said Harry Kane, who might have had he not gotten hurt for so much of the season. Still wound up with a lot of goals.
Mm.
Player of the year, I said Kevin De Bruyne, who I'll probably continue to say for the next 5 years or so. do you remember who you said?
For player of the year, I don't.
This is not going to... This is bad. You went with Leroy Sané.
And again, he was heading for it. But he was heading for it.
I know.
Look at him on... Like, in terms of when he did play, he was good.
Mm-hmm.
Damn you, Pep.
Yeah. Top four in this order. You said City, Liverpool, United, and Arsenal. So you went 2 of 4. I said City, Liverpool, United, Tottenham. So I went 3 for 4.
How did I have United where they were?
We both had them in third.
It's amazing. You keep second-guessing yourself with them. You're like, they're United. It's Mourinho. They're going to be there.
People forget because of how bad
they finished second last.
They were runners-up last year.
Yeah, but they were
it's not crazy to have thought.
They were a bad runner-up. We should have seen this coming down the tracks. Shame on us.
And then last but not least, our relegation predictions. I said Watford, Cardiff, and Huddersfield.
Ooh.
So I went 2 for 3. And you also said Watford, Cardiff, and Southampton. You went 1 for 3. So I guess I am the big winner. We move on. We move on now. The biggest surprise of the season. I'm going to go first here, JJ. You just mentioned this a moment ago. My biggest surprise of the season is actually in the negative mold of surprise, and that is Fulham. Now, if you went back and listened to those EPL preview pods, I guess the reason that I wouldn't be the big winner is because I just could not have loved Fulham and everything they were doing. I couldn't have. It's probably the most wrong I've ever been about anything.
Well,
that's saying something.
Look,
since this podcast started,
you pushed all your chips to black.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
And it couldn't have been more red.
No, and it couldn't have been more red. But what you did was you said, with all that firepower, with all that sex appeal, they're just going to be too good to fail.
They spent over £100 million to remake their squad and really go for it in the Premier League. And in the end, the only move that really came good was the $2 million they spent on Ryan Babel
who
in January.
Who I derided.
Wow. $28 million on Zambo Anguissa. He started just 16 games. Jean-Michel Seri, who scored or assisted on 30 goals in 3 years with Nice. He finished this season with just 1 goal and 2 assists. This guy was being linked with Barcelona
before
Fulham got him. Multiple managers, multiple lineups, none of it worked. Ryan Sessegnon was a letdown. Alfie Mawson was a letdown. They allowed 81 goals. That was worst in the league, obviously. For comparison's sake, you know what the worst was last year for goals allowed?
No.
It was Stoke and West Ham, who each allowed 13 fewer, 68. Sadly, it's the most that a team has allowed since 2013-14, when, you guessed it, Fulham gave up 85. This was a disaster, the likes of which that maybe some people saw, but I ain't one of them, because I really thought we were looking at a mid-table side, and I was just so wrong.
Imagine being the guy that has to restructure payments, who has to sell players, who has to cover this mess. And Scott Parker's been handed the reins.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Yeah. My biggest surprise of the season, Roy Hodgson. Crystal Palace finishing in 12th on 49 points. That is good, but does anybody seem slightly surprised, in a good way, that Hodgson is still at the helm in his 71st year of a Premier League team? He's a manager that's the oldest Premier League manager there's been. When you consider how he took the job after the abandoning of the De Boer project, it didn't seem like he would be there when they were about to enter this season. I didn't think so, anyway. Now he's going into his third season. And if you consider how his stock had fallen after Euro 2016, it seems even stranger. But somehow this works. It's his boyhood club. He just seems to fit. I was listening to him do the end of season goodbye on the pitch at Selhurst Park after the 5-3 win over Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. And he's demonstrably older looking, like you can see it, than when he was in 2016, when he was just the source of such ridicule after the defeat to Iceland.
Yeah.
But if you look back at his career, two stints as manager at Inter Milan, the job he did at Fulham, the Liverpool job did not go well, but look at the job he did pretty much everywhere else. This is a guy who has so much accumulated knowledge, and now he's bringing it back home to the club that he supported as a boy. And more than anything, it just seems to work. The first thing he did in his speech at the end of the season was to mention the two players that are leaving the club, Spironi and Jason Puncheon. And he mentioned them because of their contribution to this club. And when you see the fans at Crystal Palace, what they're trying to create with the tifos, and trying to create a different, friendly, but also raucous ultra crowd, the small, homely nature of the stadium, and the kind of homely, down-to-earth gentleman that Hodgson is, it's a fit. Now, if things start badly next season, the realpolitik of Premier League football will click in and he'll be gone. Mm-hmm. I know that. But right now, I did not think he would be entering his third season at the club, because it was pretty much a full season with De Boer. I'm shocked. I'm a little bit surprised. But he's got a nice team. He's got a nice set of footballers. Maybe this can be, next season could be like an Indian summer to his career. Well, one more season.
Unfortunately, it feels like the real work is about to begin.
Trying to keep players.
There's already talk about Patrick Van Aanholt leaving. There's talk about Aaron Wan-Bissaka leaving, who's kind of like their young star. And really, it seems like Wilfried Zaha, after all these years, every year for like the last 4 years, people have been wondering, is he going to leave? It seems like this might be the year where he finally does. And if those three players are gone, and granted, that's going to be a ton of money that comes in, but ooh, they may have a hard time replacing them. Certainly, the beginning of the season could be difficult, and it's just whether or not the board, if that happens, if the board has the stomach to bear with it and give Hodgson the chance to climb out.
At 71, he's not talking about leaving, though.
Nor should he. Why? I mean, why? If he loves his job, if the team is performing well, everybody's happy with him, then do it forever.
I'm surprised and glad for him because I think he unfairly became a lightning rod for all the ills of English football.
Soundbite of the season. This is an interesting one that you submitted, so I'll let you go first with this.
Andrew, let's just play the audio first and then I'll react.
All right. This is, you want to say who it is?
Sir Neil of Warnock.
All right, there we go.
I don't know why politicians don't do what the country wanted, if I'm honest. You know, they had a referendum. You know, and now we see different politicians and all, everybody else trying to put the foot in it with Theresa instead of getting behind her, you know. Why did we have a referendum in the first bloody place? You know, I can't wait to get out of them, if I'm honest. I think we'll be far better out of the bloody thing, eh? In every aspect. And to hell with the rest of the world, eh?
Football-wise
as well, yeah. Absolutely.
Good God.
Nothing, and I mean nothing, screams Brexit more than a 70-year-old millionaire with the advertising Visit Malaysia behind him uttering the words, to hell with the rest of the world. His goalkeeper is the first Filipino player, Neil Etheridge, to play in the Premier League, and his midfielder, Gunnarsson, is from Iceland. That's just for starters. Not to mention the man who pays his wages is Malaysian, Vincent Tan. But leave means leave.
Wow.
What are you talking about, man? It's so funny. Either side of his ears, Visit Malaysia.
Let's see, JJ, my sound of the season. I've referenced this before. I have two here because I don't know if you'll accept the first one. The first one is one that I've referenced many times, which is Ole Solskjaer. Leading up to the second leg against Barcelona.
Did
you
find the sound?
I did not. Ah. I think it might have only been said to the written press when he's talking about it. Now, granted, it's from a larger context, but the part within where he's talking about what they're going to be doing in the second leg is just so funny to me when he says, quote, "We have a decent plan. I hope it's decent. It's a plan anyway."
We have a plan, a decent plan.
It just inspires so little confidence.
At the club?
Oh, my God, when I read that, every time I read it. Now, the reason I have a second one is because I wasn't sure if you'd accept it, because technically that's not really a Premier League award, which is what tonight's award show is. Okay. That was really for the Champions League.
All right.
So if you don't accept it, I also have a Neil Warnock.
Yay!
it was just so funny to me, because after Cardiff lost to Chelsea on the awful call with Azpilicueta, who was 2 yards offside, you expected Warnock to be just this figure of anger and rage and despondency in the post-game press conference, and instead he was affable, and he almost found the whole thing funny, and he's talking in the press conference afterwards about the nerve, basically, of Maurizio Sarri complaining about calls after the Azpilicueta goal had been allowed. Here was Warnock talking about that.
He's lovely. He was moaning about a bloody throw-in or something. I said, Sarri, do you not know he's 2 yards offside? Bloody hell, you should be patting him on the back. Not complaining about a throw-in. He didn't realise he were offside, he said.
I just love that. I don't know why. I
love
how
he calls
him
Sarri. Sarri, did you not know?
It also spawned one of my probably worst impressions that I've done on this show.
I said, Sarri, he's 2 yards offside. He didn't know he was offside. Suddenly he turned into Jacob Rees-Mogg or some top.
That's a brilliant impression. I should do entire shows as Warnock.
He said, sorry, did you not realize?
I said, sorry, he's 2 yards offside. He didn't know he was offside.
What do you hear when you hear people?
I think that I nailed it.
He's a weirdo. And he said he's going to manage the team next season, try and get them back in the Premier League, lay the ground for his successor. But he says if he gets them up, he will not manage in the Premier. No, I'm done. That's me now. No.
The man is a walking soundbite. It's fitting that he was both of our winners for soundbite of the season. We continue now, JJ. This is now one of the big awards of the night. Everyone kind of edges a little bit closer to the stage for this one. The goal of the season. You want to know your contenders?
Yes.
We've whittled it down to four. Sun versus Chelsea, Hazard versus West Ham, Company versus Leicester, and Townsend versus City. Here's what they sounded like.
Away goes Heung-min Son. He's isolated at the moment, working against Jorginho. Look at the pace. He passed Jorginho. He's into the penalty area. Heung-min Son! What a goal by the South Korean! His first Premier League goal of the season, and it's worth the wait!
Hazard taking West Ham on
and on. Astonishing. Absolutely amazing. But typical of the man, a stroke of magic from a genius.
Important defensive header, Bernardo Silva winning the second ball, and Townsend! That is an unbelievable strike! Crystal Palace lead at Manchester City, but not just that, they do it with one of the goals of the season.
Crazy assignment.
There's a goal!
Man, four great choices. Lord knows how many we didn't include that we probably could have.
Well, let me give the honourable mentions quickly. Firmino versus City, Andre Schürrle's goal at Turf Moor against Burnley, the volley, which was spectacular. Aaron Ramsey's goal against Fulham, that move that was the full end of the pitch.
Yeah,
you could easily pick any one of those.
Yeah, I'll go first here and I'll be brief. Ultimately, all of these are great choices, but I just had such a hard time separating the goal from the moment, which is why I did go with Vincent Kompany and his 30-yard strike against Leicester City. I mean, what do you say? Just for that player to do that in that moment, it was a jump out of your seat moment in the Premier League this season, and I'm comfortable with that as my choice.
I'm going with Andros Townsend because I, above all people, give great, great credence to the idea that the best kind of goal is the volley. And he's absolutely nailed that. He couldn't have caught it any better. The only thing about it is, when you watch it back, it's almost like, I think it was Bernardo Silva or whoever headed it into his path. It was so perfect. Like he knew, just hit it. And he connected so perfectly. That's one of those when you hit it, you know from the minute it leaves your boot, it's going in. It's absolutely one of the best volleys I've ever seen. And he perfectly deserves goal of the season. And I think a lot of people have given him it from other publications.
Yeah, and that's a fair shout, no question about it. All right, part two now, match of the season. It's your turn.
Liverpool travel to St. James's Park, needing to get 3 points against their hero, Rafa Benitez. And what a game ensued. 3-2 was the final score for Liverpool.
It's all set on a Saturday night, a packed house. There's Rafa Benitez. Liverpool need to win to go 2 points clear at the top. And from Alexander-Arnold, free-header goal, Virgil van Dijk. He was on his own island in the Newcastle penalty area. Keogh. He falls it to Richie on the left foot. Rondon, clear up the line. Massive done by Sturridge in a tight area. The curl cross. Salah 2-1! Mohamed Salah! What a tidy finish that was by the Egyptian king. Tedder at the near post. Could break it. Does break it. Salah will run over with his 10th of the season. Newcastle are level again at St. James's Park. Right in the middle of the goal, the mid of the 6-yard box. And it's swung in. The header! Divock Origi! Liverpool have life! It's all over. Liverpool are still alive. Their quest to end 29 years of hurt will go to the final day of an exceptional season.
Arlo White on NBCSN.
Unbelievable game. And for me, the thing about it was that it was a jaded Liverpool team that go into that game. This was the classic, what I talked about, down the stretch thriller, where Liverpool are tired, they are struggling with injuries, with, you know, the exertions of campaigning on two fronts. and they come into it and they come up against a team that's bang in form with nothing to lose. Doesn't matter if they lose the game. A well-drilled, organised team that's got a little bit of pride back in the side and want to put on a good show at St James's Park. And it was a perfect meeting. Because, let's be honest, did Liverpool defend as badly in any other game that season, this season? Probably not. And you end up with a thriller. It's a whole mesh of things coming together. And that's what makes title run-ins great, games like that.
The real hero in this, of course, is the in-swinger.
Absolutely. And you've said it consistently to me, privately.
That's right. I'll just text you. Hey, JJ, 3 in the morning, couldn't sleep, in-swinger.
Yeah, I've received them in the shower. My phone goes, I'm like, oh, this must be an emergency. In-swinger. That's all it says.
That's it. You know what it means. There you go. Both good choices for match of the season. I really applaud both of us and all the work that we've done here.
Yeah,
all
right. Because we were... You sound like you played left back for Newcastle.
Here we go. Moment of the season. This is really the Liverpool portion of the show here. They were at the center of so many incredible games
and
moments this
season. I've picked such a downer, an absolute downer.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend. From the Liverpool perspective, I did not. Sunday, December 2nd, the Merseyside Derby at Anfield. Here's what it sounded like.
It goes into the penalty area from Alexander-Arnold. Mina with the header.
I think when Virgil sliced it up into the air, he turned away in disgust. But you didn't. You didn't give it up. Why did you know that something might happen there?
I think it's just instinct.
Wild volley from Van Dijk. It's awkward, but it bounces up the crossbar. Heading to the net! Would you believe it? Divock Origi has scored the winning goal in the 96th minute in the most bizarre
Do you think your days of being a Liverpool hero were done?
I think I just believed in myself. It wasn't easy. In football, those moments makes you stronger. And for me, I just try to enjoy the game. And today again, whenever I come in, I always said that we'll try and help the team. And I'm happy that we could do it in this way today.
Pandemonium at Anfield! Have you ever seen anything like it?
Oh my God. It was just the ultimate, like, put your hands on your head with your jaw on the floor moment of the season for me. Couldn't believe it. Van Dijk couldn't believe it. Like they said in the clip, he swung at it wildly and just walked away in disgust.
He was turning around expecting at any moment that the final whistle would be blown and that would have been that. I still cannot figure out what Pickford was thinking.
From a personal standpoint, you as a Liverpool fan, in this season, with all of the great wins that Liverpool had, be honest, was there any other moment this year that caused you to go crazier than that one?
Yes.
Really? The Origi goal against Newcastle?
Wow. It's a tie between the Origi goal against Newcastle and the Salah winner at Southampton. And I'll tell you why. We were wretched that night at Southampton. So bad. And you're like, this is where it all dies. We take a point out of this one at best. And he just went down the field and scored that goal. Now, subsequently, we had another goal after that. But that was the one. And he runs the length of the field. And he's not even having that good of a game. And then smashes one between two defenders into the bottom corner. That one was a huge moment for me. But you know what? On balance, the Origi one.
It's just crazy.
Absolutely crazy.
And I also thought of it for best moment, not just because of the insane nature of it, not just because it was in a derby match between Liverpool and Everton, but I think that was really the moment, as good as Liverpool had been through the beginning part of the season, I think that was really the moment when everybody thought, oh, there is something happening here. Because I think City were beginning their wobble a little bit at that point, and Liverpool really had not hit theirs yet. When you start to see things like that happening, when you start to see Liverpool get 3 points in a game where you thought for sure they were going to get one, if any, you started to think, okay, they are game challengers here. And they did prove to be that all the way to the end. JJ, your moment of the season.
Oh, such an absolute downer moment. But this was the moment when I thought we are going to struggle now to regain the ground we had made. It's the 68th minute of the Merseyside Derby at Goodison, and Andrew Robertson in a central position, 30 yards out, fires a ball into the penalty area.
Stevie, is today the day that Liverpool fans will look back at the end of the season as to where they lost it?
I'm not sure I'm ready to go that far, but I will say that Liverpool could have and should have won this game.
Robertson.
Henderson towards Van Dijk. He wins the header. Chance here for Fabinho. What a challenge! What a challenge!
Liverpool should have won this game. The chances they had, they should have. They didn't take them. Mm. And that's what it's all about this time of year.
Fabinho thought he's given Liverpool the lead.
The truth is, Liverpool had three incredible chances. Sure. Mo Salah with two one-on-one with a goalkeeper, and Fabinho from 4 yards couldn't finish.
I was absolutely sick after that one, Andrew. I remember Jamie Carragher had said the week before, he goes, it's about how the week ends. So, the 0-0 draw at Old Trafford, then we hammered Watford at home in midweek, and we thought, if we have three more points, that keeps us a point ahead. That keeps our noses in front. And that wasn't to be. And I just felt it was an uphill struggle after that.
God, I mean, Fabinho was 6 yards out and it seemed like he had 3 yards of space.
Oh my God. No, Salah as well. Yeah. Salah had chances in that game, more than the two that Stevie Nicol talks about there. By the way, lovely production on that.
Oh, thanks.
Dramatic. Sorry for to be a downer, Liverpool listeners, but that was
You keep saying that this one is a real downer. Well, not for everyone. People who support Manchester City listen to this podcast too. This is not a Liverpool podcast.
I know, but I'm just talking to the Liverpool crew. Also, if you're, you know, a fan of Everton and Lucas Digne, then it's wonderful.
Great moment for him.
Yep.
Probably one of the challenges of the season, had that been a category. All right, the team of the season. This is probably the one that I always had the hardest time with, because I could really come up with, like, my first team, second team, and third team if I wanted to. I'm going to go first, all right? Or should we just kind of rotate here at
no,
each position?
Go first. Go all right, first.
My goalkeeper, JJ.
No, what formation are you playing? 4-4-2.
No, I think I'm playing a 4-3-3.
Fair enough.
All right, my goalkeeper here, and you might have to shoehorn guys a little bit into positions that they're not totally comfortable in, but whatever. Goalkeeper is Alisson, most clean sheets, but here's the thing. I feel like sometimes that's a little bit lazy of a statistic to just lean on that and say, oh, well, he's the best keeper in the league, because it's not just about that. It's also about the defense that he had in front of him. But he also saved 79% of the shots that he faced. For comparison's sake, Mignolet for Liverpool last year was 59% and Karius was 56%. I don't know that Liverpool were in the position that they wound up being in at the end of the season had it not been for the improvement they made at that position. Defensively, we really stick with Liverpool here. Andy Robertson at fullback and Trent Alexander-Arnold at fullback. In the center, I went with Virgil van Dijk and Aymeric Laporte from Manchester City. In my midfield, Manchester City again with Bernardo Silva. I put Eden Hazard in there, and I put Heung-Min Son in there as well, even though he's really more of a forward. But I
list those again. List those again.
Bernardo Silva, Eden Hazard, Heung-Min Son.
You're getting ripped apart.
And
you're getting
front,
like destroyed. But anyway.
Yeah, I thought about Fernandinho, but I'm. You know what?
These teams aren't actually going
to
play.
I dare you to defend this team.
No.
All right. I dare you to do it. And then up front, I've got Sergio Aguero, Sadio Mane, and Raheem Sterling.
Okay.
So you can complain all you want about me not having a defensive midfielder in there, but I'll take my chances with that Van Dijk in the middle there and the attacking power. How dare you?
All right. Alisson in goal.
Mm-hmm.
The assist brothers, Alexander-Arnold and Robertson in the fullback positions. Virgil van Dijk at centre-back. Connor Cody, who played every single minute of every single game for Wolverhampton Wanderers at centre back. That level just gets you in there. So that's a decidedly Liverpool, an entirely Liverpool.
Both of us have everything the same so far except for Laporte versus Cody.
Yeah, an entirely Liverpool back four, because Cody was a U team player at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Bernardo Silva in the midfield three. I tried to do what you did in shoehorn, can't do it. Fernandinho sits in there and screens. I could have picked other players. I was half thinking of putting N'Golo Kante in there because I actually think he had a good season, but he didn't really play there. And somebody else who I've shoehorned in a tiny little bit, but he led his team in passes completed and tackles. João Moutinho for Wolves.
Okay.
Who had just a brilliant... What a brilliant signing
he
for
He was
them.
My runner-up for signing of the season.
Yeah.
$5 million he cost.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
How could they have pulled that off?
Let's wonder. Let's
how
think about
could
it.
They have pulled it off? My front three will cause issues for people. Sergio Aguero as the centre forward in the three, because you look at the goal against Liverpool in that crucial game, at the Etihad, and you look at him again coming up big on the final day of the season. He is absolutely clutch. Raheem Sterling and Eden Hazard, who led the league with 15 assists.
You left off Mane. Interesting.
By the way, if I was to do it again, I would have another team with Mane, Salah and Firmino
All
in
right,
it.
There
like,
we go.
Like, but I just tried to put together a team that was broadly representative, Andrew, of all the...
See, I threw that right out the window. I just went, okay, give me who's the 11 that I think are actually best? I'm not trying to please people, all right? This is for me.
No, I like my team. By the way, my team would destroy your team.
That's... First of all, we almost have the same exact
teams. Yeah, but
teams.
If we replicated, if we had a replicator capsule.
We have like three players that are different.
Into the
11.
Replicator capsule.
Can you believe, by the way, on the PFA Team of the Year, Pogba made it?
Yeah, because when the votes are for that and the professional footballers are filling out their cards, he was in a rich vein of form.
Oh, that's nonsense. I think they just don't pay attention. They thought, that's a name that's big and popular.
I mean, he still was United's best player in terms of productivity. So,
all right. And here we go, JJ, the final award of the night. Oh, my God. It's been a long, strange trip, and now we're here. Player of the season. If you don't mind, I'm going to go first.
I do mind, but I will let you go first.
JJ, I'm going with Virgil van Dijk, the best defender on a team that kept 21 clean sheets. He played all but 35 minutes this season. He actually scored 4 goals himself, not even a thing that is really winning him this award, but just for good measure, including in that Newcastle game that was so important. His WhoScored.com rating of 7.44 out of 10 was the best of all Premier League defenders this season. This now is from 90min.com. They wrote this. Not only has he kept some of the league's best dribblers in his back pocket, but Van Dijk also has the unbelievable double record of having the best dual success ratio, 77% of those who have completed in 100-plus duels, and the best aerial dual success ratio, 76.2% of those to have completed in 150-plus aerial duels. All in all, the former Southampton man's influence has been untold, with the Reds boasting an average of 2.32 points per game when he plays compared to 1.98 when he doesn't. That last stat there, when he plays, they win. He was the best defender in the league, and I don't even know that it was really close. And for me, he was the best player in the league overall. Virgil van Dijk, my player of the year.
My player of the year is also a Scouser, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Liverpool have 2 full-backs in the top 6 for Premier League assists this season just finished. That's an incredible statistic. When you think of providers, you often think of out-and-out wingers, number 10s, but in Klopp's system, it's the full-backs who stepped up this season. I've been absolutely blown away by the attacking impact of Trent Alexander-Arnold, to the point where his omission versus Manchester United that morning at Old Trafford, I was thinking, oh, he's out, Milner's in. Klopp is being too conservative. By sitting a fullback on the bench, I thought Jurgen Klopp was paying Manchester United too much respect. That is what he has done to this team as a 20-year-old. Gary Lineker did an interview with him, and he talked to him about his time in the youth side at Liverpool as a centre midfielder. And when you see how comfortable he is in terms of his range of passing, in terms of the fact he can play pretty much with either foot, it made me think of another centre midfielder who led the Premier League in assists during the last time Liverpool were in a title race in 13-14. That was 33-year-old Steven Gerrard. He led the league that season with 13 assists from midfield. Steven Gerrard, 13 assists from midfield. That was just one more than Trent Alexander-Arnold, 20 years old at fullback. What a phenomenal season he's had. Now, Andrew Robertson equally, and I could wax poetic about him too, but for me, Trent Alexander-Arnold is my player of the season. And just listen to this audio, could easily have been my goal of the season as well. Came in the defeat at the Etihad. This is Roberto Firmino's goal, assisted by the fullback brothers.
Alexander-Arnold has spotted the run into the back post. Oh, it's the equalising goal! What a ball by Alexander-Arnold. It's teed up by Robertson and it's put in by Firmino. That is a beautifully crafted goal by Liverpool.
Well, if ever you want to see a modern goal, if you want to call it that, fullback to fullback, the little fake cross onto his left foot, and then just look at Robertson. Hand up, I'm in space, it's over Danilo, and then a little lift and the easiest of diving headers for Firmino. He can't believe his luck. It's a great ball to the far post, and they're back in it.
What a goal.
That ball, Andrew.
Yeah.
Alexander-Arnold out on the right, about 35 yards from goal, fakes to go on the right, goes with the left, plays a pass that you couldn't have drawn it up any better. That dips, pings it right over Danilo's head to the on-the-run Robertson, who side-foots across for Firmino to score. And the commentator said, he didn't even say what a goal by Firmino. It was what a ball. Unbelievable season, and thoroughly deserves my player of the season.
Oh, man, there you go. That is it for our Devundling Award Spectacular for 2018-19.
Please chime in on Twitter, at COSoccerPod, at CaughtOffsideESPN. We've reached 1,000 followers now. We should try and just go for 2,000, get it done quickly. Let us know what you think, what your thoughts are, who your player of the season is, who your goal of the season was, all those kind of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, as the proper football man say, it's a game of opinions, Jeff.
They do say that. I've heard them say that many times. This was a ton of fun. I'll tell you what, though. There is still more Caught Offside to go. We're going to take a quick break, and then afterwards, it's the after party. Big what to watch for, because there's still a lot. Even though the Premier League season is over, there's still so much more football to be played. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now. That is fun. I always enjoy looking back on the season.
It's fun.
This was a great season, honestly. I know there's varying opinions about the title race, but the fact that we had a title race of two really like historic teams go down to the final day, fittingly, it was a title race befitting of that. I really enjoyed it. This was a fun year.
There were some fun games, some fun goals, and, you know, like I said, drama at points in the season. We can argue about the season, but we did it on a podcast that we released on Monday. Mm-hmm. So go listen to us argue there about title races.
Yeah. Now we're in the after party, my friend, where we talk about all the other stuff. Now, speaking of drama, the championship playoff always provides that, and it has been no different this year.
No, it's been unbelievable. So we had West Brom and Aston Villa, and that was played on Tuesday. That was the second leg. And Villa got it done on penalties. West Brom won 1-0. That made it 1-1. And they went through on penalties against a, how shall we put it, rather robust West Brom team. But the game that really caught everyone's attention was yesterday at Elland Road, where Leeds led 1-0 from the first leg at Pride Park. They played Frank Lampard's Derby County. Leeds go 1-0 up early on. And then things start to fall apart for the home side, culminating in this Jack Marriott goal.
There's Keogh, and now Marriott!
Yeah!
Yes! Jack Marriott!
Do you beautiful!
In the playoff semi-final! Is that the goal that takes Derby County to Wembley?
Martin Tyler, that was not.
No, that was the Derby County Rams TV. What an unbelievable atmosphere it was at Elland Road. And
in the dressing room afterwards.
Well, in the dressing room, the Derby County dressing room.
Yeah.
So, just in the lead into the game, don't forget the whole controversy over Spygate, the fact that there'd been a Bielsa spy at Derby County's training ground. Frank Lampard had been quite upset about this. So, of course, the Leeds fans created a song to the tune of Stop Crying Your Heart Out. So, basically, the lyrics were, all of the spies are hidden away. You don't have to worry, you'll beat us one day. We beat you at home and we beat you away. Stop crying, Frank Lampard. So they sang, so they were singing this, right? So basically telling Lampard to shut up. Well, Frank really enjoyed this. So afterwards in the dressing room, they put on Stop Crying Your Heart Out by Oasis and sang it again. And I've never seen a man enjoy his moment as much. And now we are set up with the John Terry. I hate to say it because Dean Smith is the manager of Aston Villa, but John Terry is the assistant manager. It's John Terry versus Lamps in the Championship Playoff Final.
Amazing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And John Terry will be in a tracksuit on the sideline for a good reason this time. He's not suspended. Unbelievable. Really unbelievable season. Unbelievable scenes. Go back and watch the game on ESPN Plus. It's so worth it. The drama is unbelievable. And I watched it in Legends.
Oh, really?
The biggest loss to the Premier League is Leeds not being there. There isn't, outside of the big clubs, that like the top six clubs in England, there is no club, not even like Leicester, who've recently won a championship, that will fill a bar like Leeds fans. They come out of the woodwork because they're a massive club. Massive club. But they have to spend another season in the championship, which is just...
It's brutal to get that far.
It is absolutely brutal. An enthralling game. Absolutely enthralling game. Jack Harrison, formerly of NYCFC, playing a big part for Leeds as well.
Nice. Let's see what to watch for, JJ. The Bundesliga. The title will come down to the final weekend. Saturday, 9:30 a.m. Both of these games at 9:30. Bayern Munich and Eintracht Frankfurt. And Borussia Mönchengladbach will host Borussia Dortmund.
We talked about these in the pod on Monday, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm excited. I think that could be... Because there's no gimme there for either of the teams going for the title. There's just no gimme
there.
No,
certainly not.
And that's what you want. You don't want... Like, the worst thing would have been, and I'm not bitter, but the worst thing would have been Bayern Munich going away to Brighton.
Hey, Brighton gave it their all right? They were leading that game. Come on.
All right.
Yeah, Bayern right now leading 75 points to Borussia Dortmund's 73 points. So it's going to, and with the goal differential being what it is, a draw will be enough for Munich to win the title. It's going to have to take a Bayern Munich loss and a Borussia Dortmund win. That is what it will be. Why are you still smugly snickering over there?
Because I flicked on to what's next on the list, and I can't stop laughing.
La Liga?
Yeah, go ahead.
Saturday, 7 a.m., Levante and Atletico Madrid. Antoine Griezmann announces that he'll be leaving the club. End of an era, perhaps.
I think
Godin leaving.
I think it's the
Griezmann.
I think it's the Twitter feed of Johnny Sharples. I don't even know if that's it. I'm terrible for not having put this on my rundown. But he tweeted the best thing ever. He tweeted a picture of Griezmann in his goodbye video. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
How disheveled he looks.
Yeah, yeah.
And
a lot of hair.
And the tweet was, Griezmann looks like a YouTuber who's filming an apology video for setting a fire in a forest. For starting a forest fire. By the way, the rumor is that Atletico got wind of him doing another decision video like he did last year. Remember how that just went,
yeah,
just dreadful. Apparently Atletico got wind of it and told him, please don't do that. Just say you're going.
Right. Let's not make this painful for everyone
and
involved.
And embarrassing.
Yourself included.
Yeah, you're not LeBron James.
Right. In the end, for Griezmann, 252 games with the club, 133 goals. He won three titles in his five seasons with Atleti. The Europa League in 18, the 2018 UEFA Super Cup, and the 2014 Spanish Super Cup. He also, remember, missed a penalty in the Champions League final in 2016 against Real Madrid. That is also on his legacy.
Did he miss one in 2014 as well? No.
If he had,
yes.
I think I would have listed it here. But
no, yes.
All right.
No.
You simply don't know, but you...
I can't remember.
You can't bring yourself to utter the words
remember.
I don't know.
Was it 2016? Or?
There's been a lot of talk about... Because last year, it was... In a lot of people's minds, it was done. He was going to Barcelona, and he stunned everybody with the video, with the announcement...
the decision.
The decision that he was going to stay
decision.
At Atletico Madrid. And it bothered Barcelona quite a bit. I think they thought that they had been kind of almost like led on for the sake of the drama of the thing that he was doing. But it seems like perhaps bygones are bygones and Barcelona will welcome him in. But that is an assumption that is not official yet. Here is Sid Lowe on that assumption.
He has not told them, or at least they are saying he has not told them, where he's going, and he hasn't yet announced it. Now, of course, one very obvious reason for that to perhaps be the case is that this clause doesn't come into force until the 1st of July. So perhaps he wants to wait. Perhaps he doesn't want that to be public just yet. But, of course, it's absolutely inconceivable that he would publicly say, yes, I'm going, if he didn't have his destination already in place. We know that during the spring he spoke to a number of big European clubs. We know that Barcelona are among them. We know that they're interested. But I guess until this is actually tied up, everybody is going to be cautious, including Barcelona themselves, because last summer Barcelona thought they had him, and he ended up phoning up and saying, actually, no, I want to stay at Atletico.
So we shall see. But I still think it's going to be Barcelona.
I think it's going to be Barcelona. Read Graham Hunter's piece on ESPN FC, which kind of shows you that it will be Barcelona and how he may fit in there. It's a good piece.
Yeah. Let's see, JJ, we do have an FA Cup final to discuss in one sec, but first I want to tell you about my friends over at ZipRecruiter, JJ, because hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place, of course, is ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's us. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside, OFFSIDE. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Yes, the FA Cup final, JJ, Saturday, 12 o'clock noon Eastern time at Wembley, Manchester City, and Watford. I don't like being that guy who
is
says that
struggling to get excited.
Yeah, but honestly, I don't know if it's because of the drama of the final few weeks of the league season or the drama of the semifinals of the Champions League, but for whatever reason, this is one that has just flown under the radar for me.
It's a chance for City to do a fairly unique treble, domestic treble, so they would have taken all the pots and pans from Premier League to League Cup to FA Cup. That's got a bit of interest in it. I guess the fact that Troy Deeney and Watford and his whole story, this is kind of the culmination of that, because we probably don't think he'll ever win anything bigger than the FA Cup, we would imagine. He's most right. likely, this is going to be the peak for him. Also, it brings back memories and it'll be a chance for people to see what it was like when they went there in the 1980s under Graham Taylor and Sir Elton John. That was a fairy tale story then, where they kind of popped up out of nowhere went to a cup final. There's angles like that, but the actual game itself, the matchup of the two teams, doesn't really interest me. I suppose if you're Javi Gracia, this is...
Oh, look, I don't mean to downplay this for... If you're a Watford fan, this is like once-in-a-lifetime stuff, potentially.
We have
like
a couple of Watford fans, too.
Good. I hope we have hundreds of thousands of them.
We are really not selling this, though.
No, they should be... this will be incredibly fun. I'm not saying this won't be a fun game. It could be an amazing game. I don't know. I'm just saying that, for me personally, it's just kind of... I don't know. I'm just not quite as, like, juiced up for this one as sometimes I would be. I don't know what to tell you.
If this was the fourth round replay, you would be hitting ping, ping, ping on the magic.
Well, I do think I'm kind of right now with the FA Cup, I do find myself getting a little bit more excited sometimes for the third and fourth round games when you get like non-league side, Premier League side matchups.
Well, at least this is a cup final that people will be able to go to. Because the rumours coming out of what's happening in the Europa League final in Baku is that no one is going to be able to get there.
Well, people are going to get there. Mm. We'll have time to talk about the Europa League final.
Okay,
if you want
sorry.
To make a prediction for the FA Cup final, I'm going to say City 2-0.
2-1 Watford.
Nice. let's see. MLS, JJ, Saturday, 1 o'clock p.m., Montreal Impact and New England Revolution. New England, by the way, have a new manager. Brucey, Brad Friedel, out. Bruce Arena, in.
Bruce to the future.
This is an interesting one.
This is mental. They're giving him two jobs.
Sporting director and manager.
Now, what is there to lose, really? Can't get relegated. They can't be any worse than they already are.
Well, they can be. I mean, Colorado has 2 points so far this season. New England at least have 11, which is still bottom of the Eastern Conference. But Bruce Arena did an interview with ESPN FC, and he was asked a question. I think it's Mark Donaldson who's doing the interview. Bruce was asked if he feels like he has a point to prove in the wake of his last coaching job with Team USA.
No, I really don't. You know, I'm as disappointed as anyone with the team not qualifying for the World Cup, but that's also part of sport. You know, when I started that job with the U.S. team in November of 2016, We'd already lost two games in qualifying, and we knew it was going to go down to the last day, and it did. And we came up short, and, you know, I, as well as others, accept the responsibility for that.
What's your message to those who perhaps erroneously say that that's your legacy?
Fair enough. Everyone has an opinion. I don't object to that. I feel personally very good about the effort I put in for that team in 2017, and I think I have a good record over 40 years in this game, and I feel comfortable for what I've achieved to date.
It's kind of a dual thing here for me.
I don't think one thing relates to the other.
Well, no, look, here's the deal. The U.S. not qualifying for the 2018 World Cup, it's not Bruce Arena's legacy, but it's part of it. I mean, it's you know, when the book of Bruce Arena's career is written, like, this is going to be a significant, or maybe even the most significant chapter of it. Hell, he even wrote an entire book about it, basically, afterwards. So, you know, it's a big part of his legacy. Now, having said that, it is not his legacy. He is a fantastic manager who has won at multiple levels, and national team among them, for what he did in 2002 with the U.S. men. So, I mean, look, if people want to just forever hate him because of what happened in against Trinidad, then so be it. But that is not his legacy, and I agree with him. He does not really have anything to prove in this job with New England.
Well, we just talked about Roy Hodgson getting back into management with Crystal Palace after what happened against Iceland in Euro 2016 for England, which was as seismic a thing to happen as the US not beating Trinidad and Tobago that night and not qualifying for the World Cup. At some point, though, you got to move on as a fan base. Like, you have to move on. And I don't see a relationship between New England Revolution and this. What I'm fascinated about...
Well, the relationship is him. People are just talking about him.
Like, yeah, but like... Sorry. Even if he gets them to, like, MLS Cup final, how does that change anything?
Right.
Like, how does that relate to not qualifying for the World Cup? It's chalk and cheese, really. Like, and you're talking about legacies. He can win two MLS Cups in a row. It won't have an impact on his legacy. His legacy is the quarterfinal in 2002. And guess what? Is in the equal part legacy, not making it in 2017. There's your legacy. Pick one side or the other. My point is, you're in your late 60s. I'm sure he's made a ball of money in Los Angeles, and he made a lot of money from US soccer. Why do you want to go to Gillette Stadium? That's never full. There's barely 5,000 people there. The team is crap. The owners don't care, and they've landed you with two jobs, DOC and head coach.
Well, you make that sound like it's a negative. I think a lot of coaches want to have that job. They want to have say over personnel decisions.
He's in his late 60s. He can't do everything. Like, he needs help. And really what this team needs is to be located closer to Boston with a stadium and start again.
Yes, that is true.
That is what they need. Yeah. And I just feel like, why would you want this?
One other one I want to mention here, but what I have to say about it is not necessarily fully MLS-based. Sunday, 7:30 p.m., FC Dallas and LAFC. And I'm kind of using that as a way to talk about this. Did you see Carlos Vela is not on the Mexico preliminary squad for the Gold Cup? And that is only the beginning. There's no Vela, no Chicharito, no Tecatito, no Hector Herrera either. This is super weird and shocking to me. Now, here's the explanation. I read Tom Marshall's piece on this.
Okay.
So I'm going to kind of read from that. LAFC forward Vela's omission was due to the player preferring to be with his club and family, said Mexico coach Tata Martino, and comes after the 30-year-old has recorded 12 goals and 6 assists in 12 MLS games in 2019. My God, he's been unbelievable. West Ham striker Hernandez asked permission to be absent due to the birth of his first child, which is scheduled to take place during the tournament and was expected, while Porto midfielder Hector Herrera has asked not to be called in after a long season and a pending club move, reportedly to Atletico Madrid. Porto winger Corona Tecatito missed out after a back-and-forth in March about his fitness for friendlies against Chile and Paraguay. Martino was livid that Corona hadn't turned up to his first camp as El Tri coach and was open in expressing that. Martino said that he hadn't spoken to Corona since then and that after weighing up his options, decided against calling in the player who has been in good form with Porto. Martino said in his time managing the Argentina and Paraguay national squads, he hadn't experienced a similar situation of a number of players asking not to be called up. Quote, I don't think it's common. It's not something I've seen before, said Martino. A call-up to the national team is a prize for footballers, and when they don't see it as that, it's logical for them to not be here. I'm stunned by this because I would have thought that this would be something that Mexico would value, that these players in some way would value coming off of the World Cup. I'm just kind of shocked to see that these guys are so kind of like casual about taking part in this tournament.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
And yeah, Tata Martino has every right to be annoyed. But what he has to do now, as much as this has annoyed him, there's some names there that he cannot afford to alienate if he wants this team to be a power and not just get through and do well in the Gold Cup. He's got to look long-term on this. So a bit of, diplomacy is needed.
Well, yeah, I mean, like,
now, Mexican players have had player power before. We saw it at the World Cup. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point because Jesus Corona is a young player.
Yeah.
And will be expected to be a significant part of the Mexican national team for years to come. And there is clearly a rift between him and Tata Martino right now. There's no way around that. So I don't know. I thought this was fascinating. In some ways, as an American fan, it's interesting, partially because, okay, this maybe boosts the U.S. chances if Mexico's missing maybe their four best players, although Irving Lozano, if he's healthy. But you know, by the same token, I also kind of want to measure the U.S. against the best Mexican team. And if they're without these guys, and you can't quite do that, Mexico will still be very good. They might even still be the favorite to win this thing. But I don't know. For a country with so much national pride over this team, I was just stunned to see these guys kind of just not really take this seriously.
Well,
kind of disappointing.
It may be just a perfect storm of every one of them having particular reasons why they can't make the Gold Cup and Tata Martino being quite upset. We'll have to see.
Yeah. I just like Clint Dempsey in his prime, it's not a thing I could picture him doing.
Yeah, but you can't say that because I remember,
like, Dempsey, Bradley, I could use envision these players. Now, you know, Landon Donovan is one that's interesting because remembering when he stepped away from the game. But I'm trying to remember, did he ever keep himself out of any kind of major tournament?
I mean, he took a huge sabbatical.
Right, yeah.
The same thing used to happen. By the way, players are now much more guarded of their off-season time. And they are looking with more of a forensic view of tournaments. Do I need to do this? Is this going to impact me going into next season? Is rest more important? The season is longer. And they also have to think about when they go on preseason tours with their clubs. All that impacts. I remember as far back as 20 years ago, Alex Ferguson basically answering the phone for Roy Keane and saying no when Ireland would go on the USA Cup tour.
Right.
No.
Yeah, I guess with wages being what they are now for club teams,
clubs call
there is
the
a lot
shots
at stake, but man, that's still kind of disappointing. I saw that Gareth Southgate's planning on including Harry Kane for the England game a week after the Champions League final. Is Harry Kane ever going to have a break?
That's because Harry Kane probably had Gareth Southgate round the neck when he was writing that. You better put me on. Harry Kane will travel. Harry Kane will be, he can't stay away from football. He's not capable of it, and it's been to the detriment of his health.
Yeah, kind of. Well, there you go. That'll be interesting to see as we get closer to the Gold Cup when all the rosters are released for all the different club teams or national teams. Oh man, this was fun. Wow. Oh my goodness. I can't believe it's over. This really now does mark the end of the Premier League season. Officially, the Devonlings are over. Everyone has left. So many people are hammered. Hopefully there's Uber drivers standing by, or this could really be dangerous.
You didn't book the Uber drivers?
Don't people book their own Uber drivers?
No, we were doing a special thing for people.
Well, then there's going to be problems.
Jennifer Lawrence is crying in the corner. What have you said to her?
I've been talking to you for the last hour and 15 minutes.
No, you said something rude to Jennifer Lawrence. Apologize.
I don't have a rude bone in my body, all right?
And Mel is not coming again.
This was fun, my friend. Really, it was. To you and all the fine people here at the Caught Offside Ballroom tonight, I say,
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.